This is a Doxcast, not an Argon Soxcast, or a Bendis and Loxcast. Now I'm hungry. This is a Doxcast. It's a nerdy Toxcast. Discuss a Moxcast with Rich Early and friends.
That's right. Yeah. That's right.
Yeah, Brendan has been kind enough to join us, and Darren and I ran into you in literally in Portland, Oregon at the Image Expo, what, about 3 months ago now?
Yeah, and Comics Pro.
Yes,
When Darren cornered me and forced me to sign all of his Motor Crush issues.
Wow.
I clearly made an impression, yeah.
Wow.
Very much in character for Darren.
Yeah. If there's one thing our customer says, he's pushing.
It was very flattering. I mean, to know that he'd brought his Motor Crush issues on the plane just to read, not knowing that I was actually going to be there. Yeah. And just happened to have them. I was taken aback. It was really nice, and I was more than happy to sign them.
I appreciate that. And usually I'm not so, how do I put it? Like, I saw that this could be my only opportunity to meet you and get them signed, so that's why I chased you down the down the hallway in the hotel. So that is not normally how I am. So I'm British and I'm reserved.
Yeah, the previous night, Brendan had just watched A Clockwork Orange, and he just knew this wasn't going to end well for him.
You should have seen what he did to Jim Lee.
No.
Let's save that for another podcast.
Yeah, that's
guys.
After hours. No. Anyway, so... Brendan Fletcher is here talking about, well, you got a lot of stuff going on, but the most recent book of yours to hit the shelves, and I'm going to do my best, is Isala. Damn it. And I put too much pressure on myself.
We just spent like 5 minutes going over this.
Because you're giving me a big lead up.
Yeah, exactly. I was in my head. I was processing, so... and issue number one is out. When is issue number two? Is that this week?
Issue number two is May 9th, yes.
May 9th, okay. Yeah. So first things first, tell us a little bit about about the new book.
Well, pronounce it, but there is no right or wrong way to pronounce it. So anyone listening, please don't get hung up on it. It's a fantasy adventure book. It's not a real world. Isola is a real word. It's the Italian word for island, and the Italian pronunciation is close to what we're using. There is a Spanish/Argentinian pronunciation, I believe, that's more like Isola. But, I mean, you can't get this wrong. You just call it whatever you want. Isola. Like I said, it's a fantasy adventure series. It's very much inspired by the work of comics great and, filmmaking god of animation, Hayao Miyazaki, and all of the films from Studio Ghibli, really. In that, less so in its content, although you could say that in content it does have a lot in common with Princess Mononoke, but really for us it's more about tone and style, something we're trying to capture in the feel of the storytelling. The gist of the story is that it's about a queen and her captain of the guard. The queen has been cast under an evil spell and is turned into a giant cat, and the captain of the guard has taken it upon herself to lead the queen away from their kingdom, which is in jeopardy now, and to lead the queen halfway across the world in hopes of finding this island called the Isola that may or may not exist and that is said to house the entryway to the underworld, where the captain hopes to find a solution to the queen's problem. Sorry, I stammered all over that.
No, that was perfect.
It's the end of a long work day. And
Yeah,
it's
not
like it's like this is my first time talking about this book that I've been working on and on for 2 decades.
Yeah, that's one of the things about this comic is that jumped out to me is the look of the book. Like, the book is just absolutely beautiful, the cover's very eye catching, and then the interior. I showed this to my fiance, who just reads a few comics here and there, and she just loved it. Thought it was great. So,
well, there's so many ways of talking about this, but at its core, this is a book built to show off Carl's artwork. Carl and I have been best friends for 30 4 years or something now. We went to school together. We grew up together. And it has pained me for a couple of decades to watch Carl get on, you know, cool series after cool miniseries after cool, like, one-shot or whatever. Kept getting all these cool gigs, and every time he would be referred to as newcomer Carl Kershaw. It's like his work was always amazing, but he's just been kind of undercover as he's, like, comics' greatest secret. And we started working on this a number of years back before Gotham Academy, but when that surfaced, we decided to shelve Isola in the hopes of kind of leading into it with something a little more mainstream that could get a little more notice. And also it looked good on us to have done another book as a team. I mean, we did it with, obviously, with our partner, Becky Cloonan. But Carl and I had done the Wednesday comic series for DC before that, and then Gotham Academy. And so this felt like a good punctuation to that series of projects.
Yeah, we've been Becky Cloonan fans all the way back to Demo. So,
yeah.
So we actually interviewed Brian Wood on a podcast. So now I would love to get Becky Cloonan on a podcast. That'd be awesome. So let's go back to the beginning. So this is actually really cool. So you're saying you were friends with Carl Kershaw since you were basically kids. So my usual first question, and we did this a little backwards, but is what's the first – do you remember the first comic you bought or your first experience, you know, with comics when you were a kid?
Well, I don't remember the exact first experience. There's all sorts of random memories of I remember getting a stack of busted up some coverless comics at my church when I was young. I think I was bored and somebody just handed me a stack of comics. And they were great. Like, they were amazing. But the comics before that, it was a lot of superhero stuff. But there was no, I didn't have a passion for it, and I wasn't collecting anything, so it was all very random. It started to really worm its way into my brain in around grade 6, I guess. I was about 10. This is around the time that Carl and I first met and started going to school together. But it was G.I. Joe and Transformers comics that I was interested in, just because I was watching the show and buying the toys. We all talked about it at school. So I was going to the newsstand and grabbing those comics whenever I could. What really changed everything for me was an ad in the back of one of those books for ElfQuest. It was Epic's color run. Marvel had a line called Epic back in the 80s. They did things like Akira, actually tons of amazing books that I still have. But most notably for me, they had gotten the license from the Peonies to color and reproduce the first full series of ElfQuest, which was done in larger, like oversized magazine size, black and white issues, self-published. Through the late 70s and early 80s. I didn't know any of this, of course. I knew nothing. I didn't know what ElfQuest was. I just thought the name was cool and the artwork was amazing. So I made it a problem for my family. We tried to find it anywhere we could. It was my grandfather who took to the Yellow Pages and found that there was such a thing as a comic book store. And it was only a couple of towns away. It was about a 20-minute drive away. We went there. They had all the issues of ElfQuest, which I believe at the time was Epic had 4 issues out. They had them all for me. And then they offered to save any subsequent issues for me so I wouldn't have to go through the stress of, you know, always wondering when it might come out or... it was incredible. Like, this was the pull list. I didn't know there was such a thing. And not only that, but they had a catalog. This wasn't the days of Diamond. There was no previews. In fact, there were a number of distributors, and I can't even remember what it was that they were using at the time. It was like 1984, 85 maybe. But that catalog totally blew my mind. all these books I'd never heard of. Everything looked incredible. So from my starting point of ElfQuest and finding a shop called Memory Lane Comics in Niagara Falls that had a shop also in St. Catharines, which became my regular on Geneva Street in St. Catharines, that allowed me to branch out into all sorts of different comics, and I started collecting, and I forced it all on Carl. ElfQuest was a big turning point for him too, and I think you can in some ways probably feel a little of its influence in Isola. But it was that time. It was around the time when like Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles had just come out as a black and white from Mirage, I think their company was called.
Yeah,
Eastman and Laird's company, and the black and white indie craze was just kicking off. There was no shortage of really inventive stuff. It was like, it felt like it was the first modern comics renaissance. I feel like we're sort of in the second or third now. But, I mean, there's never been a better time for comics than now, but it felt like at the time there was some real magic happening. And it kept me coming back. My family, I will be eternally grateful to my grandfather, my mom, for driving me to the comic store every week and helping me kind of realize that this is a huge passion of mine. Changed my life.
So,
I'm rambling.
I love the phrase change your life. Like, I firmly believe that my shop is here to help change people's lives. Like, we sell comics and games, but that's not what we really do, you know. And I realized, you know, for me, I dropped out of college and I was the first life that this store saved and changed, you know. When I had nothing else, I turned to the only thing that I loved, which was comics, and opened this place, and here I am 25 years later. So my question though is, okay, you're sharing a really good experience that a lot of people, you know, our age, I'm 48, it sounds like you must be pretty close to that.
Yeah, I'm 44.
Yeah, and so you're sharing an experience that a lot of us older listeners and readers are very familiar with and everything. But, you know, so all kinds of people had those feelings and emotions and sensations and experiences at that same time. But what's the difference? Like, how do you move from that experience to becoming a comics professional? Like, what happened?
Well, for me, it was really slow. I kind of had two career tracks going at the same time, one of which I was running on, the other, I guess, it was, I can't really call it a career track, it was a hobby, but it was something I was passionate about. I tried for ages to break into comics, and while I was doing that, I had a fairly successful career in performance. I went to school for... I had a double degree. I was in visual art. I was also in music. I'm a musician. I'm a trained. I went from university straight onto the stage, doing musical theater and opera. And I also did film work, TV, mostly based out of Toronto. And that kind of carried me through my 20s. But never stopped drawing, and more importantly, writing. I shouldn't say I never stopped drawing. I, in fact, gave up on the drawing through my 20s and started focusing more on writing. Because why put all that time and effort into drawing when you had friends like Carl and Cameron Stewart and Ramon Perez? I mean, these guys are incredible. And it's a lot of fun to work on story material with all these guys. And it's actually more fun than just grinding out scripts on my own. I think a lot of it is connected to... I'll get back to the life story in a sec. But I think a lot of that feeling of wanting to collaborate is because I started seriously thinking about storytelling... with Carl. It was part of what we were trying to do together. There was, we were both still drawing. Neither of us knew how to write, but we knew what we liked. And we started isolating parts of storytelling that was really effective to us and trying to figure out how to be storytellers. We started this together. And so as we started putting story chunks together, we were kind of editing each other as we went. So it's almost like I grew to become a storyteller, or I grew to become a professional storyteller with someone else at the same time. It's not that I can't do it on my own, but it's super fun with somebody else. I mean, if you really jive with them, the way that Carl and I do. And I think that a lot of us kind of feel that way. Like, Carl is a great writer on his own, but he has a lot of fun when we work together. Cameron's the same. Cameron's won an Eisner for his Cintitula webcomic, which you can now get as a physical book through Dark Horse. He's a great writer, but he also likes to collaborate a lot. Yeah, so anyways, through my 20s, I kept writing stuff on my own as Carl was doing books for Marvel and then to DC. I was putting together ideas. I was working on scripts, writing pitches. I made my own little comics that I would occasionally bring to cons that I would draw and print out on my printer and take to the copy store and make tons of copies of. I was constantly grinding away at this, and also on the side, Carl and I had started working on this book that would eventually become, in some way, Isola. It was called Miki, and we worked on it for almost a decade off and on, and had interest from Dark Horse and an actual deal with Image at the time through Jim Valentino, who I believe was editor-in-chief at that point in time. But because I had my own job, Carl was still doing mainstream comics, we could just never actually get it together. Like, we were too young, we were too inexperienced. Neither of us was brave enough to go without that paycheck for as long as it would take to actually get the series off the ground. And we ran into the totally amateur mistake of letting the thing spin out of control creatively. Like, the more ideas we got, we just copy-pasted them in there. This thing just snowballed into, from a, you know, a manageable graphic novel-sized story to this sprawling epic that would have taken us decades to finish if we were doing it monthly. Yeah, we were young. We were fresh. We didn't know how to manage it. So we kind of walked away from it, and I really doubled down on doing work that was not comics, and I thought that it was never going to happen. I kind of gave up on it. And Carl, I guess, kind of gave up on it in a way, flirting with it a little through his webcomic, Abominable Charles Christopher. And it took Wednesday Comics to really... I think it was the combination of the Wednesday Comics gig and then Assassin's Creed graphic novels through Ubisoft. The Wednesday Comics thing was a really cool gig. It only lasted for about a summer. Well, I guess we worked on it through a spring and it came out through the summer. And that led directly to Ubisoft offering us Assassin's Creed stuff. Carl and Cameron did two graphic novels alone and then one with me. And that was the thing. Like, they published it themselves through Ubi Workshop. Very few people have seen them. They're pretty cool, and they paid us video game money, which was great, and let us, you know, let us kind of survive and start spitballing other projects and getting other things together in that time.
Well, it's amazing when you look back over things in your life, things tend to work themselves out and happen when they need to happen, and I wonder if you had done that deal back then, you know, what would have happened versus how, you know, the era is right. Like, the time is right for this book and for what's going on at Image and accessibility through the web and all this sort of stuff that really hasn't ever lined up quite this way before, right?
Well, I think, it's more challenging than that. Like, I think that if we had been able to put out Miki the way we wanted to, and if we had had the capability to get our shit together at that time, and set aside the things that were not critical and just focus on what the project needed and get it out, I think that both of our lives would be very, very different today. Because we look back on that material and it's still solid. I'm trying to not say that from like a biased place. Like it, if somebody else did that stuff today and published it, I'd probably buy it. And I think other people would too. It was at the time Carl's best work. And I think it holds up today. But yeah, it just wasn't to be. Like it was, we couldn't manage it. Like, I think this is a thing that people don't talk about a lot with when you do image book, it's like self-publishing. It's like you're going into business for yourself. When most, when people go into business, they like take out loans or they have a lot of money that lets them take that risk. And we were young guys in our mid to late 20s, and we weren't making the kind of money where we felt like we could go for a bunch of months, you know, just riding it out. It's almost like a year. You've got to be able to go for a year and work on this comic without any income. And we didn't have any supplemental stuff. Like I could have kept doing gigs on the side, but I mean, for Carl, every other gig he would do, that takes up all his work time. Speak of the devil, it's him texting me. It's like he can hear me talking about it.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's tough, you know, when you're drawing a comic, that's like all you can do. Unless you're crazy fast like Jack Kirby or work out a style like Romita Jr., where it's your like, quote-unquote work style, where you can use it and do, really quickly and do like more than one book a month. Like you're limited to just working on whatever that project is that you've committed to. And if that project happens to be one that is essentially a self-published project that's not bringing in any upfront money, you've got to have some kind of savings to lean on. And we couldn't do that at the time. Things are a bit different now with Image. You can negotiate for a limited advance. It's not a lot, but it can get you over a hump. Also, we had the benefit of working on a bunch of other projects where we were able to bank a little bit going in. And I'm still sort of juggling the occasional freelance thing on the side while doing this. I've been working on a Ghost in the Shell project while doing this. So like that brings in a little bit of money, but doing self-publishing work, doing like image projects, it can be a little more challenging. Whereas the DC stuff is just like it's a paycheck. Yeah. You don't own it at the end of the day. And if anything incredible happens with it, you don't benefit in the same way. But there is that paycheck that you can rely on.
Yep.
And it's like clockwork over DC. That's the other thing. If we talk about comics and money in my experience, if phone work for DC is the clockwork, and it's all and super well accounted for. It really feels comforting to know that you're kind of being taken care of that way.
Yeah. Darren and Brad, you're the comic experts. What I've eaten up all the questions. So,
well, I mean, you've kind of answered some of my questions already, Brendan, which is great. I mean, one of the things when we saw you at Comics Pro, you did the presentation to all the retailers as we kind of, you know, we were sat in that big room, and you know, I learned that you and Carl were friends, and you'd been friends since you were children, which was, you know, fascinating to me. I mean, that was one of the things you've already discussed. But when I go back to, is it Miki? Like, do you think that there'd be any plans for you to? I mean, if it's not finished, obviously, but if you had did a hardcover of Isola, would you consider putting that material in as a bonus?
This has come up a couple of times recently, and I think what we would probably do is scour through the old Bible. I think we would probably find some, I mean, not the King James Bible, but like the Bible that we put together for Miki, which included an entire first arc script, quite sizable, and a bunch of finished comic pages, a ton of color work, tons and tons of designs. Yeah. I think we would probably cherry pick a few items and include them. Part of the challenge with that right now is that all the files for Miki are on zip disks. You're all older guys.
Yeah, I know what a zip disk is. I remember zip disks. I used to be a graphic designer, so I know what a zip disk is. Yeah.
Yeah, so they're all old, and that's the other thing. They're all old Photoshop files.
Sure.
So there are a number of challenges ahead of us. We do have printed versions of some of that stuff, but, you know, like, I wouldn't want to scan those in and stick them in the back of a beautiful Izuma hardcover.
Yeah.
But, yes, it's something we're talking about, and we would be happy to show it off in a limited way. There are designs from Miki that are straight up making their way into Izuma now. There are characters that are in a way making their faces, showing their faces in Izuma.
Cool.
Yeah, I don't know. It's up for discussion. We would like to. I think we'd kind of like to show people what we were doing, and there are people who've seen it. Like they're. CB Cebulski will bring it up occasionally in a bar if we run into him, how he still has a copy of that Bible we gave him 15 years ago. And we should seriously consider, you know, finishing it and putting it out because it's still so beautiful.
Was he working at Image then, or was he at Marvel?
I'm not sure where he was then.
No, I'm just curious.
He may have just started at Marvel.
Okay. Yeah.
That guy seems awesome. He just seems like one of us is in charge of Marvel, and that really makes me happy.
Yeah, CB's a good dude. We've known him for 20 years, maybe. Carl did work. Man, I can't. What was the name of CP Manga? I think it was called.
Oh, yeah.
It was the company that I don't think he owned. I think he was working for them. And he commissioned Carl to do some pinups in the back of some manga that he was translating and editing. And this is ages ago. We met at the Chicago Comic Con, I think. This was the one that was eventually bought by Wizard, turned into a Chicago Wizard World out by the O'Hare Airport. Carl and I used to go to that thing religiously. And we met CB there when we were really young, and he was a friend for a lot of years, and unfortunately we just don't see him anymore. I mean, he's like the big man over at Marvel, and so it's tough to even get him for a few minutes.
Oh, I guess we know who. I guess we know who the creative team on the X-Men relaunch is now. Brad, do you have any questions?
Well, you kind of covered it. I mean, I get where you're going with the Ghibli feel for Izuma. When I was about halfway through, and of the first issue, and your reveal of the tiger also being the queen, I got very strong feelings that it was the Emperor's New Groove. And I do want you to know, now that you've confirmed it is a witch that has cursed the queen, I'm going to read her voice as Eartha Kitt. Yes,
no,
as Eartha Kitt as often as I can.
And, it's not a witch who's cursed the queen.
Oh, okay. Ooh, spoilers.
I did say she's suffering under a curse, but no, it's not a witch.
Oh, okay.
That has cursed her.
So she did drink something? Is she going to turn into a llama? That's all I need to know, really.
No.
Okay.
No, there's no witch, and she didn't drink anything. And there are no llamas, but I'm sure if you put that bug in Carl's ear, he will design a llama-like creature that will make an appearance in a future issue.
Can you name it Brad?
That's right.
Yeah. Sure. Yeah.
Fantastic.
We might spell it differently
I will sign that
it belongs to the world of Izuma. It might have like two A's.
I think umlauts. You add umlauts to anything, and that's a new word.
Yeah, sure.
One of our most successful podcasts we ever did was about apostrophes in Star Wars names and how much they just drive me absolutely crazy. So,
Kira in the new Han Solo film.
Yep.
Q-I-apostrophe-R-A, which is an adaptation of the original name of, I believe, Rey, who was originally called Kira, K-I-R-A.
Oh, sure. Oh, and you're a Star Wars fan. No. So we're running out of time. But so do you think, so you took this path through DC. Do you think working for DC, is that a necessary step in some ways? Do you get that name recognition and then you're able to do something with that? Or was it just, you know, like you said, like it's comfortable because it's a good paycheck on a regular basis?
Oh, so many things. Like I think if you like superhero stuff, or if you just want a good, fair publisher that's going to take care of you, and you want to work with a good family of, editors. And I have so many friends in DC. I love those guys. I love working there. I love if you've got to work in that system where you're, in a way, a cog in a machine, you know, you do your job and there's somebody else through waiting down the line to do their job, to take it from you and get the book out. Like DC's, incredible to work for. I don't really have a, it's all what you want. Like if that's what you want to do in comics, then DC is amazing to work for. If you want to sell as many books as possible, you probably want to focus on the book market and probably get your books in with Scholastic, because no one's touching the work of Raina Telgemeier. there is a ceiling, I think, to focus. There's a sales ceiling right now on superhero stuff, and it's tough to kind of move beyond that, and especially if you're not working on Batman or Spider-Man. So there's only a few of us that get to win that lottery every few years and get to work on those titles and can really sell bigger numbers and therefore get, like, you know, royalties that are decent, which don't, by the way, kick in until you've sold a certain amount of books. Most books don't sell beyond that threshold anymore. So most books aren't pulling in royalties for their creators. There's a whole lot of things to look at. Like getting name recognition on a DC book is not going to help you sell better in Barnes and Noble or through Scholastic. And those places will ultimately sell more books for you. Just speaking, and I hate to say this on a comics retailer direct market podcast, but this is the reality of being a writer in this business. You have to look at everywhere your books are selling, and they're selling most in other places, and they can sell most through, or the medium is selling most through a publisher that maybe isn't as popular in comic stores. I don't know. Where do you guys get a lot of Scholastic?
I'm growing the all ages young adult section with a lot of Scholastic books.
Brilliant.
Yeah. I mean, brilliant. we don't have, you know, a huge amount, but I keep adding and I keep adding. So
yeah. But I think that's like, this is what's happening, right? Like we're growing out the Western comics world, yeah. North America, yeah. The UK, Ireland, we're all like, we're growing out of believing that comics means superheroes. And when we do that, when we as creators focus a bit less on it, when publishers branch out, when retailers open their arms to it, new customers flood in, yeah. And the market grows, everybody wins. And I think that's kind of where I am with it. When you ask me, like, do we as writers need to go to DC or Marvel to get name recognition? Like, I guess if you want to be really successful in that corner of the market, but that corner anymore is potentially so much smaller than it was 20 years ago. And that's certainly a starting place. It's my starting place. It's because that's what I've known. It's kind of the business that I've grown up with, where I've always kind of made friends and you know, my pitches, et cetera. It's where I have contacts. And it's what I love in my heart, but I also don't feel the need to make to tell those stories. I feel like I've enjoyed those stories, but I want to that are on track and feel different and progressive. And like I'm glad we're able to do. Buy the superhero book, or I shouldn't say that because really, Motor Crush is a superhero book. Like, it's just not a kid book, and I think it's just sort of expanding the view of superhero is. Well, I told you guys I was going to ramble.
That's okay. Yeah.
No, people would rather listen to you talk than us, that's, I think, so yeah. We appreciate
I'm listening to you.
Well, that's just
it's tough because I don't think there's any one definitive way of answering any of these, answering that kind of question or, and I have a lot of, I have a lot of mixed feelings on it myself, obviously. That I'm trying to work out.
Yeah, I mean, we appreciate you, you taking the time to talk about these things because, it's not something that was not always talked about. So, and you've been very honest, and we appreciate that. So, thank you.
It's a lot of what we were all talking about at Comics Pro, yeah. Really. It's just like we as creators, yes, Carl and I were there to show you all Isola and to convince you to bump your orders by 10% or whatever we could do. But at the same time, we are desperate as creators. We're desperate to know what's going on in retail. Like, how are you guys thinking about this? What can we do together to what can we do as creators to help you guys?
And I just wanted to say, sorry to interrupt you, but the package you sent us digitally, with the promotional images, the banners, the PDF proofs and everything, that was fantastic. I mean, if every awesome. Creator did that, I couldn't have time to go through it all. But the fact that you did that made my job easier to just, you saw that I put the banner on Twitter. I didn't have to look for that. You just gave me that, and I had images, and that was so helpful.
And then we get to the FOC, and I'm willing to order this book because I've met you, because you've supported us, and so we probably brought in four times what we would have had none of that happened.
Yeah.
So.
But I don't know any other way to do it. And that's, I don't know what else to do. I know the direct market well. I feel like I have so many of my friends are retailers.
Yeah.
I feel comfortable kind of talking to you guys and I feel like this is what I can do to help. And if there's a part of going to Comics Pro is asking like, what else do you guys want? What else can we do? So I feel like it's trying to make the most of what we got.
And top to bottom, like nobody's got a perfect answer,
Yeah.
I mean, we all know that, and Jeppy said this to the retailers at the end, it's time, there are things we'd love to, that people would enjoy to do in every medium now. We'd love to watch YouTube videos and Netflix and read books and comics and go to movies and, ad an infinitum, right? But the time mm-hmm. in the day is still 24 hours, even though all these other avenues exist now. And so, it's frustrating when 40 million people go to see Black Panther on opening weekend and 23,000 copies of the latest issue sold. That's not right. I mean, something is still really wrong there. And it's not like it would ever be an equal number, but there's more wrong there than just like floppies are dying or retail is, whatever. Like there's a problem going on culturally or something about the medium that is just not correct. And that's what we're all trying to figure out as on every level, I think. So
yeah, exactly. I want to know why. I mean, webcomics can do really well, millions and millions and millions of views.
Yep.
And a Kickstarter can get, a ton of money. And then we're struggling to sell a handful. That's it. I just want to know the answer to those mysteries.
Yeah, well, I mean, we're old media. We're suffering from a lot of the things that cable and the big three TV networks and look at everything. NFL ratings are down because they're tied to cable. Movie mm-hmm. tickets are down because they're tied to movie theaters. Like comics aren't any different when they're tied to my shop or anybody else's. And I'm not insulted. This is just where we're at,
Yeah, exactly.
But part of me says, a big part of me says, though, that's still not good enough. There's still something not right, you know? Like, I mean, the fact is, that's a Black Panther comic, you know? That's an Amazing Spider-Man comic, you know? I mean, I'm sorry to talk about those Marvel, you know, it's just an example, I guess, you know? And these numbers are just, this is not cool, you know? So, anyway, there you go.
No, please don't apologize for it. I'm just as interested. I mean, I feel guilty using my my niece as a bit of, you know, as a bit of a guinea pig with a lot of it, because she's so into the Marvel movies and she reads comics that she gets from school, and I try to introduce her to other comics and see what takes, see what she's interested in, and see what will get her to be inspired to go back for more.
Yeah.
It's tough, and I do feel that you are correct when you say there's a lot in competition for our time, because I feel like everything I give her, she loves a lot, like some of it in a really profound way. None of it moves her away from YouTube or Netflix.
Right.
Right.
She'd rather spend more time on watching YouTube videos or making Instagram stories than bugging my sister to take her for the next volume of whatever book I've given her. Yeah.
All right. We have hit our, we're at 43 minutes. Does anybody have one last?
I just wanted to end on a positive, like mm-hmm. more of a positive note. And the positive note is that the book has done well in our store. And obviously I enjoyed it. Customers are enjoying it. I've actually read issue 2. You sent the PDF, so I'm confident. I mean, I'm excited. I mean, that people are going to get to read issue 2. I just wanted to end on, you know, a positive that the book is doing well. Image at first issues, it's sometimes, you know, it's difficult to tell how it's going to go. But I felt confident with what we spoke about at Comics Pro, meeting you, what I'd read, and it's paying off. And I just wanted you to know that. That's the reaction, and that's the response.
Darren, thank you so much. You're guys, welcome. Thank you so much for all of the support. Seriously, it means the world to us. And let me just tell you, you can tell your customers, if they're feeling like hesitant about where it's going, tell them just to stick it out for issue 3, because everything gets crazy in issue 3. Okay. And if you think it's been wild in the first 2 issues, or if you think that you're just starting to enjoy the fantasy world, you get a lot of answers in issue 3 of Izola.
Okay.
It's really, Carl and I are so excited for everybody to read Izola, even just for us to send it over to you guys, the retailers. I can't wait to get the feedback on it.
Excellent. Have you got anything you want to promote or anything while you, for the last...
Oh, me?
Yes.
No, no. Just well, Izola. There's a Motor Crush Volume 2 trade coming at the end of May.
Yep.
And in September, I believe, there's a Ghost in the Shell Global Neural Network from Kodansha, USA. And it's got a beautifully illustrated story in it that I wrote. It's drawn and colored by LRNZ, Lorenzo Ciccotti. His work is stunning. Go and look him up online. He's everywhere, Instagram, Twitter. He's got his own site. He's done beautiful covers for Jeff Vandermeer's Southern Reach series, and you can get his graphic novel called Gollum from Lion Forge.
And actually, if you want to try that out, it's part of the Ghost in the Shell Neural Network Free Comic Book Day. I think there's a preview in there, the book that's free, for Free Comic Book Day.
I don't think that our story will be in there.
Oh, your name was on the cover. I haven't had a look, but your name was on the cover.
Let's hope it's yours.
First
then.
I've heard about this.
I looked today. I just didn't have time to check. So, I mean, I'll let you know. I'll confirm that. I might be wrong. So.
Yeah, I don't think they had any of Lorenzo's finished pages in time to print them in there. I could be wrong.
Maybe your name was on the cover just to say that you're part of that project. I don't know.
Just to get me to sign some for a new comic book day.
Yeah.
It's going to be it's beautiful. I'm really excited for people to see that too.
We will have a display of your books to promote, obviously, alongside with this podcast. With Batgirl, Burnside, Black Canary, and we even have Power Rangers Pink. So
I loved Black Canary.
Yeah,
Gotham I really Academy enjoyed well. That book. Was like, to me, it was like channeling everything I loved about Buffy the Vampire Slayer. But
so yeah,
thanks so much.
Yeah, I just one more.
I hope you listen to the music too.
I didn't because I'm lazy, but you know, but that was awesome that you did it.
Give it a shot. If you like in your head what it would sound like if Susie and the Banshees were channeled through Yeah Yeah Yeahs.
Okay.
That's
nice.
That's kind of where we're at.
Well, thank you very much for your time, Brendan.
Yep.
Thank you guys.
I really
thanks
appreciate
for
like
me.
I said,
appreciate
short
it.
Notice and when I chased you down the hallway, I didn't realize you were actually heading out for food, so I felt bad that I held you and Carl up from actually eating, because Carl looked hungry as well. So, Carl,
right.
I was sorry
we
about
ended
that.
Up chatting in the lobby for another hour after.
Did you? Oh, I feel better now. Thank you.
Is that why you just carry food around with you now, Darren?
Yeah, I carry my comic books and some snacks just in case.
Yeah.
But isn't the reality, though, that's sort of how you remember people, or that friendships are started is in, like, you know, I mean, seriously, in, like, weird situations or, like, you know what I mean? So here we are.
Absolutely true. Like, you guys will always have a special place in my heart because Darren chased me down with motor crash issues.
That's
it sounds like a joke, but it's true. I'll never forget you guys.
Yeah, well, you're not done seeing us yet, so get ready for the next time you try to go to eat. So
just always lurking around a corner. Where can people find you if they want to get in touch with you, like through Twitter or any avenues like that?
Yeah, it's just if you can figure out how to spell my name, it's two E's and then B-R-E-N-D-E-N, F-L-E-T-C-H-E-R, Brendan Fletcher, .com, at Brendan Fletcher on Twitter, Brendan Fletcher on Instagram. It's my name everywhere. But if you put an A-N, you're going to get that actor from British Columbia.
Yeah, I made that
mistake. Or you're going to get the musician from here in Brooklyn who was on, I believe, The Voice on TV.
Okay.
So, all right.
E-N.
Well, thank you much, sir. We will look forward to May 9th, that's for sure.
Yes, certainly.
Absolutely.
Thank you so much, guys.
Thank you.
Yep.
All right, and thanks to all of you who tuned in live to watch the podcast or listen to it later. We appreciate it. New episodes every Monday. You can find us at ParadoxCNC.com, at ParadoxCNC on Twitter. We're on Facebook and all that good stuff as well. So until next time, thank you, and we'll see you on the next DoxCast.
This was a DoxCast. Hope you think it rocks cast. Oh, look at the clock's cast. Until next time.